I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Okay, here we go, honeys.
The veteran on the edge of the penalty area. Here's Lohman with the cross. There is Brock! Oh, what an emotional goal. Out of the game for 11 months through injury. It's her first in 3 years.
And Beckmead does have her hat-trick. Record-breaking, history-making, barnstorming performance from England. They have arrived at Euro 2022. Space opening up for Georgia Stanway. Goes for goal! Oh my word! Germany with 9 points and 9 goals. Finland 0, Germany 3. Saved by the goal! Oh! Wow! The cheek!
And she scores again! Didn't make the shot!
Welcome back to Upfront at the Euros. I'm Flo Lloyd-Hughes.
I'm Chloe Morgan.
And I'm Rachel O'Sullivan.
At last, it's time. 24 days ago, 16 teams kicked off Euro 2022. Now, two remain, Germany
and England. It's a historic occasion at Wembley, but most of all, a truly mouth-watering final between the two best teams of the tournament. Will endless years of hurt finally be put to bed under the iconic Wembley Arch, or will Germany break English hearts once again? We're going to recap how both sides got here, discuss how they're going to match up, identify the key battles all over the pitch, and give our predictions too. Everything you need to know about the final tomorrow, it's all here, so stay tuned.
This remarkable Germany, for so long the rulers of women's football in Europe, who are through to yet another final.
England will get their shot at glory. Wembley awaits.
Guys, I feel sick. I've been feeling sick for like 2 days, and it's Saturday here we're recording. So we've still got another 24 hours to go. I've luckily got an EFL game today to take my mind off things, but I can't stop thinking about it because it's everywhere. It's all over the news. And I'm just like, I don't know what to do.
It's my exact reaction, yeah.
We've wanted it to be all over the news, okay? This is great, okay? The fact that it's in your face and you can't get away with it is like away from it is everything.
Chloe, they're ramming it down our throats. Oh my yes. God, help me.
And I'm eating it all up, to be honest. Yeah, it's a big occasion, and I feel just as nervous as you. I've thought about it non-stop since we got through to the final, and now obviously we know our competition. We know they're good, we know they're strong, we know they're efficient, they're ruthless. They're tough ones, but that's what we wanted. We didn't want to go through to a final and face someone that we thought wasn't going to be a challenge and it was going to be an easy game. We want the drama. Come on, we're British, we love it.
I don't know, I would have quite liked someone we knew we were going to thrash. That would have been quite an enjoyable day out at Wembley. And now we're going to have another, I feel like another game like Spain, where like I'll just not enjoy the actual football until afterwards. And then, you know, hopefully know we win, go back and watch it again and have a lovely time.
No.
Yeah, this has been mad because I think in our hearts we all thought there were, you know, we all wanted England to get to the final, and we all thought that was a possibility with how well they've played on Serena Wiegmann before this tournament and obviously hosting and everything. But still in the back of my mind, I was like, I don't actually know if they're going to do it. And obviously a lot of us bought tickets to this final a very long time ago, literally a year ago after the men's final, the pre-sale went on sale for this tournament. And like most of my friends, we all bought them with the hope that England were going to get there, but not necessarily with the actual expectation. And now it's come around, it feels like everyone's kind of lost their minds a little bit and doesn't actually know quite what to do because it's actually real. And I think no one quite thought about what would happen if it actually happened.
Well, I don't think anyone anticipated it, because all I can see across all social media is, can I have a ticket to the final? Has anyone got a ticket to the final? I didn't get a ticket to the final and I should have done. So I think we were quite pessimistic, maybe as a country, that this wasn't going to be the situation. And I will put my hand up and say that I was one of those idiots. massive shout out to LinkedIn for hooking me up with a ticket. Really appreciate it. But I mean, also...
Hashtag gifted.
Hashtag thank you for saving my life. But yeah, I mean, as part of that campaign with LinkedIn, and not to sort of throw them in too much here, but like as part of that was my meeting with Carol Thomas, who was the second women's Euros captain back in the day for us. She was the first captain to reach 50 caps. And I went on this walk with her and sort of discussed the journey and how she felt about, you know, the possibility of England going to the final and what that meant to her and the squad. And we had such a great conversation because it was all about, you know, how things have changed, how things have progressed, how we're still facing the same kind of battles in certain areas. And, you know, it was beautiful to be with someone who has been a massive part of our European Championship history. And now for her to go to the game and see the Lionesses, the squad that she helped build in this final in 2022 is incredible.
That's beautiful. I like that. I feel like the world is quite serendipitous sometimes. Like, obviously, this isn't quite the same at all. But what Sophie and I've been talking about is that 10 years tomorrow was, 10 years ago, we went to see Team GB against Brazil at Wembley. Team GB beat Brazil 1-0. And the two of us went home and were like, we want to know more about women's football. Like, we'd like to, you know, get involved a bit more. And that was the spark that started Girls on the Ball. And then 10 years that day, we're going to be in Wembley watching Lionesses in a Euros final. And I just feel like surely Team GB won. Surely that means the Lionesses are going to win.
Oh, man, please. I've had so many messages back and forth on Instagram, WhatsApp being like, guys, I'm so scared. I'm scared. That's the the best kind of adjective to describe how I'm feeling.
But I feel like they've done something. They've already achieved, like, the whole thing about the semifinals. This is the fourth in a row, all the heartbreak that's gone before. I feel like, not that the pressure obviously isn't off. It's a home year, as you're at Wembley, you're playing Germany. But you have shaken that kind of semi-final ghost off you now. I feel like whatever happens tomorrow, football has changed in this country. Whatever happens.
Massively.
And yeah, I don't think that's going to, you know, there's no way you can turn around now and call this tournament a failure, whatever happens. So for me, I'm less, it's a lot less like Spain at 80 minutes to go, going, oh God, everything's going tits up and it's going to be everyone's going to call it a failure and the newspapers are going to trash them. I just don't see that. That's not going to happen. But let's not be negative. Let's focus on an England
just
win.
Just the positives. And I think I was actually preparing for this podcast last night and I was thinking, okay, what are the big takeaway messages here? And I 100% agree with you, Rachel, that I don't think it matters what happens with this, with the win or whether we lose. It really doesn't. And I've made a list of like the positive things of what this tournament has actually brought about. Okay, so bear with me. All right. So we've already seen more eyes on the game than ever before. We've had history making record sales before we even reached the quarterfinals. A sellout opening game at Old Trafford. Sellout games to teams to matches where England weren't even involved. People who didn't watch football becoming interested in football. People who weren't interested in women's football becoming interested in football. The positivity around, you know, the women's football community is absolutely bloody huge right now. There's been no negativity around, you know, fans being involved in fights or towns being trashed or violence or aggression or anything like that. As far as I've seen, it's just been a purely beautifully positive tournament. Little girls going absolutely viral for losing their shit to Sweet Caroline, sellout record shirt sales, and this incredible bloody pod. So those are my big positive key moments to take away from this tournament.
And one more, the Lionesses is playing some bloody good football that we can all enjoy.
Quality
footy. Flair goals, like, mwah, love it.
I think that's for me, Rachel. Yeah, definitely. Like, I was doing an Into Five Live yesterday, and the woman, I can't remember her name, it was their drive show, but she was like, oh, you know, isn't the impact of this going to be, you know, there's going to be such a big legacy and people are going to participate. And I said, I think we put too much pressure on these events. You know, you were talking about 2012. After 2012, and she said, oh, there's going to be 87,000 people in Wembley. I said, in 2012, I went to Wembley and watched USA Japan, and there were 87,000 people in that stadium. So we've had these big moments before, and if we get too caught up on labour these things as game changers, nothing changes. It's not the first rodeo for something like this. But I think the real difference for me has been the way that the football's been talked about.
Yes.
And that's what you mentioned about the flair and the quality. Is even just a few years ago during the Women's World Cup, so little of the coverage was framed in conversations around quality of football, around elite athletes, around, you know, goals and technique. It was all about inspiration. I mean, Phil Neville himself said, I think after one of England's wins, that he was so proud of how his team had inspired little girls back home. And for me, that is not the first priority. The first priority is winning a football match, and I think this tournament has really shifted that. The only thing I am a little bit kind of frustrated about is there is so much momentum now to be capitalized on, and I'm already kind of looking at WSL things coming up and like kind of rolling my eyes a little bit about some of the decisions. For example, City versus Arsenal being put on a Saturday night at 7 p.m. Firstly, no one's going to go to the stadium to watch that. I guarantee you there won't be more than probably 1,000 people there. And no one's going to watch it on TV because Saturday night, 7 p.m, no one's at home, or they're going to be watching Strictly or something else. So stuff like that annoys me because there's so much momentum here. And then you make silly decisions like that.
There's no excuse now. There's a World Cup next year. So it all the more reason to this next 9 months, 10 months when we get to August when the season starts. You have to capitalize. You will never have a warm enough, big enough audience with, you know, with an appetite for women's football. And if you don't capitalize on it now before a World Cup, like, what are you doing?
We will get stuck into it. And let's get stuck into the football, because let's talk about England's route to the final, because, I mean, really, in all but one of their games, and maybe for 50 minutes of that game against Austria, they have pretty much pushed past and absolutely bulldozed most of their opponents. We really only saw them under the absolute cosh in that quarterfinal against Spain, and maybe a 15-minute period against Sweden and the second half, or late in the second half, against Austria. So for the majority of this tournament, England have been on top and have, you know, dominated teams, have absolutely swarmed them with attacking opportunities, with goals. 20 goals scored, just the one conceded. It's been a roller coaster ride, mainly because, Chloe, if it wasn't for that Ella Toon equaliser in Brighton, we wouldn't be sat here talking about finals. So there is a sliding doors moment in which, you know, a Spain potentially is going to Wembley, but they got it done, and that's probably where everything changed for this team.
Massively. I think that was definitely our defining moment and our defining game. Well, obviously it was, because it was a knockout stage, but yeah, I think what we've seen in this competition is probably the most consistent England that we've seen in any other competition previously. And again, we talked about the strength and the depth of the squad, the game management that Serena's that had, the consistency with the actual squad selection itself, and also the tactics as well have been consistent. She's consistently had the same subs come on at the same time. So it's been a bit of a winning formula. I know we're going to talk a little bit later about, you know, whether that'll be the case going into this game. But, you know, we've seen in terms of the challenges that England have faced, they've gone from, you know, games that have been fairly easily wrapped up. You know, we had the 8-0 win. We've had games where they've been frustrated by the Northern Ireland block. We've had games where we've come from behind in, you know, the Spanish game. So, and we've managed all of those situations and come out on top. So whatever situation we face now going into Germany, I think there'll be that level of confidence there that we've done it before. We've now had big games. You know, we've gone against Sweden, we've gone against Spain, you know, Germany, another big competition. So yeah, it's going to be the same kind of feeling, but I think there's the same kind of confidence and calmness and collectiveness that we're going to see in other games. And, you know, when you look at the social media of what England and the Lionesses are doing behind the scenes, a lot of it is obviously the recovery, which is which was key following the Sweden game. But a lot of it is actually the girls enjoying themselves and just appreciating this moment and what it means for everyone. And I think I think that's a massive part in it, because the players not only want to, you know, get onto the pitch, play these games, be in these really intense situations, but it's really nice to see that they're actually enjoying, you know, being a team, enjoying the moment, enjoying the experience, and you know, bonding off the pitch, because I've always said that that's a massive factor in how you play on the pitch.
I'd have to agree with that. I'd also say I think the fact that they've had a couple of moments during this tournament where they've been nervous, they've come out nervous, they came out nervous against Austria, they came out nervous against Spain, they were nervous against Sweden. And the fact that they got through that they knew they could, they played nervous, they played, you know, a bit frantic at times, and they had players on the pitch who could identify that, who could say, like Leah Williamson against Sweden, every time she got a touch of the ball in that first half, she would take an extra touch, she would slow it down a little bit, she was, you know, trying to calm the team down. I think her leadership has grown massively throughout this tournament. And I think moments like that will be really important for when they come out on Sunday, because they're going to be nervous. It's going to be an insane atmosphere. It's an insane location against an insane, you know, team that we're playing against. So there's going to be so many elements coming in there. And for them to know that they can play when they've got butterflies in their stomach and feeling a bit nervous or feeling a little bit frantic and still come through, I'm hoping that that kind of experience throughout the tournament will stand to them on Sunday.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes. I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly. Seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
I mean, although England have dominated so many of those games, it hasn't always been an easy ride. And Millie Bright especially has been an absolute rock at the back. Mary Earps, we did give her some love on the last pod, but she's been really, really good when she's been tested, because Chloe, it's hard, isn't it, when you are spending a lot of the game on the front foot and then being forced into quick reactions when you haven't, you know, necessarily had to be called upon. Like, that is really hard to suddenly snap into it when your team's dominated for most of the game. So, I mean, tell us how good Earps has been, but also how good her back line, because Serena Wiegmann has started the same team in all of these games, and that is, you know, very unique, because I don't know, no other team I think in the entire competition did any of that.
Well, I think I was reading that if she does start this next game against Germany in the same way, that it'll be the first time that's ever been done in any international tournament, which is incredible. But also, it's a winning formula. So, you know, why change it up if it's clearly working for you? And I think, you know, touching there on Mary Earps and her performances throughout this competition, you know, I absolutely adore her, adore everything she's come and done this year for us. And, you know, I think a lot of the goalkeeper training that we actually do is about the intensity, and it's in small bursts. So you might not be doing anything for very long periods of the game, and then all of a sudden you're called into action. And in that moment, it has to be explosive, dynamic, it has to be quick decision making. And she's exercised all of those things perfectly. I mean, there has been large chunks of the game where she's not really been called into action, and then it has been that absolutely killer save, like that one against Sweden just gone, that was the game changer that could have completely altered the game. It could have completely altered our chances to be now in the situation that we're in. So for me, I think she's been key. When she's been called upon, she's been there. And it's not just the things that she's done, you know, physically, it's also the presence that she has. When you're at the games pitch side, you can continuously hear her communicating to her backline, telling them to push up or telling them to come home to relieve the pressure. And again, I know we touched on the stat last week about her being one of the most consistent and accurate pass players in the tournament. I mean, that's incredible in itself as a stat, and that just goes to show that she's, you know, willing to have the ball at her feet, willing to, you know, take charge, be that kind of like fifth person at the back to relieve that pressure. And I think she's done it outstanding. And in terms of the defensive situation, I mean, we've only conceded one goal in the entire competition, so I think that says a lot about things. So as a fivesome, They're a bit of a bloody rock. I wouldn't change that winning combo. And I know Daly obviously had that that little blip in the Spain game, but she jumped straight back on the horse in the Sweden game, and she was one of our key star players in that. So I think it was the right decision to allow her to correct the mistakes that she made in the Spain game, and now she's full of confidence.
Amen. I don't really know what to add to that.
No, the only thing I was going to say...
Here we go.
I'm not going to be a negative Nancy.
Serious.
I still am quite nervous about the fullback situation. And Rachel, I know you want to talk about the battles that are going to unravel on Sunday, but I am quite nervous because I do think Daly bounced back really well in that Sweden game. And I think it was quite clear that Wiegmann had told her not to push too high because she was sitting back a lot. She wasn't getting as much of the ball, but I think that worked in England's favour. But then obviously, like, Bronze was bombing so high, she was leaving herself a little bit exposed. But I think there was something deliberate there with Daly just sitting back a little bit. But it still does make me quite nervous, the fact that we have someone who's not massively familiar with the position, and then Lucy Bronze, who is so on the front foot all the time. Those battles are making me very nervous, Rachel.
Yeah, I also think as well, we just have it in our bones now to be nervous about England's backline. It's just because over the years, that's been our area where we've been nervous. I agree, Lucy Bronze made me nervous against Sweden. I know she ended up scoring the goal, that was great, but I did think she got forward a lot, and Frielina Rolfo was able to expose that gap that she left. And for me, when we were looking at the France-Germany game, I feared France more in terms of I thought their wingers would exploit our fullbacks quicker in the first half. And that worried me that if we were to face them. That in no way means I'm not worried about Germany, Jesus. But I just felt like France could potentially get an early goal or two using their wingers, and that scared me. But I do think with Germany, what's really interesting is I think two of the standout defenders has been Millie Bright and Hegering. I think two of the standout midfielders has been Oberdorf and Kira Walsh. And obviously your two key forwards have been Beth Mead and Alexandra Popp, both on six goals, both gunning for Golden Boot. Like, it just feels like the perfect final. Everyone's matching up here. That's where the battles are going to be. How is Bright going to deal with Popp in the air? Both are very good in the air. You know, Hegering dealing with Beth Mead. There was a moment in that France-Germany game where Salma Basha got into the box, received the ball. It was almost a carbon copy of Beth Mead's goal against Sweden. She received the ball, she was given time to receive it, take a touch and turn and shoot, and she missed. And I remember thinking to myself, if that was Beth Mead, given that time and space, she will put that in the net. So there are little areas that you can identify. I know we're nervous about our fullbacks sometimes. There are little areas with Germany that I think we could exploit too. But I thought, you know, Svenja Huth was brilliant down the wing. You know, I think Lucy Bronze will have to take her on. She was very, very good against France. So, yeah, I think there's going to be little battles all across the pitch. That's just going to make this such a tasty match.
I think the battle that I'm most excited about is that Pop versus Bright battle. I think as two big sort of, you know, headering geniuses, both from, you know, attacking and defensive perspective, I think they're the ones that I think are going to be the... the determiners of the game. I think obviously she's a very physical player, very physically dominant, but then so is Bright. But I think that's going to be the biggest battle for me, the one that I'm going to be watching, because I think Bright's going to have her hands full.
I'm just hoping for no pop flops in the box.
Pop flops?
Yeah, winning herself a penalty somewhere. That's what worries me. But she hasn't been doing as much of that this tournament. She's scoring goals, she doesn't need to.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably the most terrifying thing, isn't it? The form that both teams are in is exceptional. Let's talk about Germany's route to the final then. I think I went to two of their group games, their quarterfinal against Austria and then their semi-final. So I've seen a fair amount of them. And I would say there are similarities with England in a sense that their defence has been very organised. You know, they've had a very solid back four, and they've had Froms behind the back four, who's had a really good tournament as well. And that goal against France was the first goal that they'd conceded all tournament. So similarities to England in terms of, you know, how solid they've been at the back. And then going forward, although they haven't scored as many goals as England, and I don't think they're as free-flowing as England, they are so ruthless and clinical. It doesn't take much for them to be efficient and get on the score sheet. And what was it in the... in the Spain game, two shots on target, two goals, job done. They are just so well organised and so in tune with each other, and such good technicians on the ball. I think for me, that probably is what makes them so dangerous, because you just can't fall asleep for 2 seconds. It's not like, I think when you play Spain and you can kind of feel like, well, as long as we try and let them have the ball but keep them as far away from our goal as possible and force them to take shots from distance, we might be okay. With Germany, it's just like they've got so many outlets to punish you with. That's what makes them such a good team. And it's been quite a transformation too for them over the last couple of years, because, you know, Martina von Tecklenburg came in 2019, and their recent major tournament history hasn't been the best. You know, got knocked out in the quarterfinals in 2019, but they last won the Euros in 2013 and haven't gone beyond the quarterfinals in a major tournament since. So this has been a great kind of rise back to the top for them, and also the resurgence of a player who deserves so much love, deserves all the flowers, Alexandra Popp. And there's something about the destiny of that, Rachel, which is also quite terrifying from an English perspective. It's like everything is kind of coming together. All the pieces of the puzzle are kind of linking up. I mean, what do you think about that?
I mean, you could say that for both teams, though. There's like, there's an element of that kind of, oh, this is their moment for both teams. So, yeah, I mean, it can be scary. I think the thing is, though, about that team as well is they're so young. So, again, whatever happens for them, this has been a massive resurgence, and I think they'll be in finals for major tournaments to come over the next few years. But I think the game we played against them in February, obviously in the Arnold Clark Cup where we won, they were missing a huge number of key players due to COVID and injury. But I think they've all come back in together, and it's like they've been playing with each other for years, and Martina's managed to get that from them. I think Serena has done a similar thing where she's managed to get the team understanding the game plan, understanding each other and how they play. I will say as well, the German press scares me. The German press is excellent. And I think because they know where each other's meant to be, what the game plan is and how they read each other well, everyone's on the same page when they press. So that's probably another area that England need to be very, very switched on for. Alexander Popp, you know, I wasn't always her biggest fan during kind of domestic and European football. I just felt like she dived around the place a lot, but she has massively grown over the last few years. It's amazing to see her in this tournament, her resurgence. She's had such, like, been so unlucky with major tournaments, not scoring, being injured. To think she'd never scored in a major tournament before is wild. And apparently, I saw this on Twitter yesterday, there'd been stuff in the news, it must have been German news, about how she plays, her physical appearance and the way she plays is very male, and, like, you know, kind of saying stuff like this about her. So she rocks up into the press conference with her mask on, takes her mask down, and she's drawn on a mustache. And the other player in the press conference is like, oh, hi, Alexander, it's Alexander Popp. She's also got a sense of humour, which I like. So yeah, I think for both teams, there does feel like, both teams feel like this is our moment. So it, all of this coming together, just, it makes it really hard to call, but it also makes it like the perfect final, which, you know, I just, yeah, really whets the appetite.
Well, this is what I was saying at the start about wanting the drama and the challenge. And you guys were like, no, it'd be great just to have, you know, Portugal in the final or something, and just know that it was going to be a bit a less of a challenge, not an easy game, less of a challenge. But I have to agree. I mean, you know, Germany, one of those sides, they've got such a long history of winning major international tournaments, and I just hope that it stops tomorrow. But I mean, they are a really ruthless and efficient side. I mean, they've only conceded one goal, and they did in fact score that themselves, so that is how efficient they are.
They're so good, we don't need other people to concede. Like, we'll do it
yeah,
for you.
Literally that.
I also want to talk about Alexandra Popp's love of animals, because she's been...
Zookeeper.
She's been qualified zookeeper.
What the fuck?
She's been going to London Zoo a couple of times, and that's basically the way that she kind of relaxes in her downtime. She likes to hang out with the animals, and I love it. I think it's brilliant, and she seems like such a cool person. I think she looks like such a smiley person, such wonderful energy, but then absolutely ruthless on the pitch. I mean, what a phenomenal person.
There's been some incredible behind the scenes, you know, part-time jobs going on, wasn't there? Who was it that was a balloon?
Nicky Everard. Belgian goalkeeper was a bouncy castle.
The bouncy
like,
castle,
rented out
not
bouncy
balloon.
Castles. Chloe decided she was a balloon, like, physician or something, I don't know. But she's a bouncy castle salesperson, I think.
I'd love to do an audit of the jobs that they get up to behind the scenes that they shouldn't have to do.
Exactly.
To
Amen,
do.
Sister.
We also have to talk about 2009, because this is not the first time that England and Germany have met in a final. I was at a conference over the course of the last 2 days, and Kelly Smith was there, and she was asked about that final. And I think what was so frustrating for England, I mean, they lost that game 6-2, and the scoreline doesn't really show the whole picture, because Kelly Smith was reflecting on the fact that, you know, England were well in that game for an hour, and then Germany just took control in the last half an hour of the game and just absolutely tore them to shreds. And England totally collapsed, almost like the way we saw, you know, Norway and Sweden do against England this tournament. Is, you know, those moments where teams just, you know, they can't find a way back and they're so lost. So I think the only person still standing from that tournament would be Jill Scott. she's obviously competing in her 10th major tournament, and she could finally come away with a medal. I don't think the final's going to be like that, because I personally think it's going to be very tense and very close, and a lot of these knockout games have been like that this tournament. Finals traditionally are not the most high scoring ones. Obviously that 6-2 is a slightly different situation, but it's been such a long road for England, and in a way Germany, to get back to this point and almost reunite in this final, because they played each other in the Arnold Clark Cup in February. England won 3-1, but it was a very depleted Germany side. There was no Lene Oberdorf, obviously had a fantastic tournament, being one of everyone's favourite players, is a phenomenal midfielder and just an absolute beast. There was no Alexandra Popp that day either. So two of the Euro's standout players were not in attendance. There was a bit of a COVID and injury issue within that squad. I think they were missing, what, like 11 of their first team players, Rachel? So
yeah.
This is a whole different story. But the actual genuine progression in a very short space of time, even since then, but across the last sort of year, of both these two sides has been exceptional, hasn't it, Rachel?
Yeah, I got to praise the managers. I think that's probably been a massive thing for both sides. Baroness Sue Campbell called Serena Wiegmann the missing piece of the jigsaw. Probably the same for Germany. You know, and I think when you get that recipe right, this is what the result is. And I'm just hoping then, you know, we've got a World Cup next year, that both of these teams continue to grow and to rise the way they have done. So, yeah, it's been great, because obviously Germany being a powerhouse in the women's game, although I'm sure we all enjoyed them not getting to finals quite so regularly, especially when we were playing against them. But and to see England kind of rise back, it felt like we had gotten really far up the rankings and then kind of started to fall back a bit. So it's great to see them now up there as well as a powerhouse. So yeah, it's like Chloe said, the story, the drama.
Yeah, it's I think you're completely right, Rachel. I feel like I say that quite a lot. It's
you and me, Chloe.
Yeah, it's quite
same wavelength.
Yeah, just Flo will get on board at some point, don't worry.
At some point, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think, you know, Serena, we forget sometimes that she's been in the job less than a year, is it? Less than a year?
Yeah, it's September.
10 months. And in that time, we've obviously won the Arnold Clark Cup. We've built a squad. With the squad cohesion within a year is bloody massive, given the changes that have taken place, the youngsters that have come in, and also keeping the keeping some of the big old favourites, the Millie Brights, Jill Scott still in there, Nikita Paris, and you forget also that we've had a change of captain as well. I mean, we've gone from the era of Steph Horton to now the era of Leah Williamson, and there's been a lot of transition this past year, and to now sit in a Euros final in your host country, leading them out there, is going to be huge. And I think, do you know, the biggest thing that I'm worried about actually is the fans, because I think we're going to get into the stadium and I think it's going to be quiet for the first 15-20 minutes, because
bring
everyone
the noise.
Is going to be shitting themselves. And it's not like we're, you know, we have the trumpets and the drums going every now and again, but I don't think the German fans kind of bring the same kind of Swedish energy to the games. So I think it's going to be quite a quiet Wembley until a goal happens. And then I think it will start to pick up. And I'm just hoping that it's us that picks it up. But yeah, it's been a big year for England. So I think this is, credit to the whole team, but credit to Serena for doing absolutely wonders within less than a year.
Vigmania tattoos, right?
100%.
Yeah, I'm getting a tattoo if they win, but I'm not sure what yet. So okay. TBC, but we can have a workshop on that.
Okay. All right, we'll take it to a poll.
One of the things I'm generally worried about, Chloe, is the fans, because Bramall Lane was tense. There were some very quiet periods in that game. And this is another level for this team. We've had 70,000, we've had 30,000 three times over, four times over, how many times over. But now we're getting to 90,000. That is a whole different ball game. I know they played in front of, what was it, 77,000 in that Germany game back in November 2019, which Germany won 2-1. I think Pop scored that day, didn't she, Rachel?
So did Ellen White, just FYI.
Yeah, but...
Ellen White, I mean,
true. So this is, it's going to be like... When you come out of that tunnel and it hits you and you see all those people, like, you can't practice for that. You can't train for that. And I just really hope that they can take it in their stride and it doesn't overwhelm them, because I think we've seen some really nervy moments from England this tournament.
We have, but we've also seen, like, what I've enjoyed is when they go down and have a corner and they're doing this to the crowd, or when something goes well or they score a goal or they make a tackle and they turn to the crowd and they kind of, you know, engage with them. That's probably something they've been told that to be allowed to do. And it probably makes it less scary rather than like trying to ignore the crowd, which you just, you can't do. That kind of engagement, knowing that you can get them going, you can be like, yeah, come on, they can do the same to you. So maybe we'll see a bit of that. I think when they, like, they're going to come out of the tunnel, the roar, the anthems, like, that's going to get them going. And I think we might see a little bit of that, a little bit of that kind of engagement between player and crowd.
Yeah, you've got to use the crowd. You've got to use, and I think they have. I mean, after the game, I think they've stayed around for sometimes up to half an hour, you know, going around, speaking to people, signing shirts, you know, dancing, wearing cowboy hats, the whole shebang. And it's been phenomenal that they've actually utilised the crowd. You know, the nerves for the opening game, if you can get over an opening game in Old Trafford with 70,000 people there, another 20,000 is going to feel like a drop in the ocean, to be honest. So I think they've already had big games, sellout crowds. They're going to be used to it by now.
Martina Vos Tecklenburg said it was going to be a great football feast, and yeah, I couldn't agree more. I think it's going to be tantalizing, sumptuous, and I just can't wait to get there. I just need England to win, though. I just need it to happen.
We all do.
I'm gonna have to, though, go and ask you guys to stick a flag in the sand, because we know what time it is. It's flag in the sand time. Chloe, you go first. Give me your predictions for this one, please.
Jesus Christ. I think it's going to be 2-1 England wrapped up in full time. I think it's going to be two goals, and I think it's going to be 1-1 going into half time. And I think we're going to nick the second goal in the second half.
Okay. You took the words out of my mouth. I think it's going to be 2-1. I can't do extra time, so I won't. Frankly, if it goes to extra time, I'm just going to leave. So I'm going to say 2-1 in 90 minutes. But also, the rabbit, who has predicted every England result, has pulled out England for this one. And I'm just going to trust him. He's been right all along. So I'm going to try and just not get nervous and just go with his prediction.
Yeah, Scotty, he's been better than Farah this tournament. Better than Farah.
Obviously, I'm going to go for an England win. I agree. I think it's going to be nervous. I think it's going to be tense, Chloe. I think it's going to be tight. But I'm going to go England 2-1. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
We all think the same. We're all on the same page.
It's sure as hell not going to Pens, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, stop.
I will not be watching that. I will be throwing up in the concourse. Well, guys, the next time we're going to be speaking and doing a pod is going to be after the final. We're going to be getting together in the back of Rachel's van and recording a pod after the final whistle. Who knows what kind of state we're going to be in. I just hope we're going to be celebrating an England win, and we're going to be doing it straight after the final whistle. So you'll be getting our instant reaction, which could be great. It could be painful. It could be legendary. It could be iconic. We'll have to wait and see.
It might not make any sense. It might just be slurring.
We might just be in tears. But yeah, thank you as always for listening to Upfront. If you've got any questions, you can tweet us at Football Ramble, at Floyd Tweet for myself, at Girls on the Ball for Rachel, or at Morgie_89. You'll hear from us all tomorrow night from Wembley Way after England's chance to make history. We'll see you then.
Upfront is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember. Yeah,
you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit. And he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.